Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and not that of WVRC Media, its staff and management, or the distributors of this podcast. City of West Virginia. This is the Scoop Squad with our hosts, Jenny and Ashley, bringing a diversity of ideas to conversations affecting the people of the Charleston, West Virginia area and throughout West Virginia.
Hi, I'm Jenny, and I'll be your host this afternoon or whenever you're listening. Heck, you might be listening at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're doing whatever you do at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's the great thing about podcasts. You can listen whenever you want to, but the point is that you're listening. I am from Charleston, West Virginia. I ran for city council at large and lost. But as a result of that race, we decided to launch a podcast. But Ashley is still running.
Hello. Okay, I wrote it down because it's kind of a little bit of a tongue twister here. I'm your coffee loving, contact sport loving, constitution loving, conservative city council candidate for Ward 14.
Oh, wow.
And I am the only one sitting at this table that's still in the race.
Ouch.
So, whoop.
Whoa.
Ouch.
That's okay. I love y'all. Hard conversations.
Hard conversations. Wow. And we've got today on the Scoop Squad, Truth Squad. We've got former Democratic candidate.
As Ashley pointed out.
Jonathan Frazier is in the house.
How you doing? Thanks for the warm introduction and the other warm introduction
You're
from
welcome.
My buddy over here. Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Let's talk politics. You guys are doing something great in this community, and we need to get people more excited about politics. So let's do it.
All right. So this will drop here in a few for our Facebook listeners. This will drop tomorrow after 6. We'll post that. But don't forget to look for it. And we're going to say goodbye to our Facebook watchers. Goodbye.
Okay. Yeah. Listen to us on your way out of town. I know we're traveling to Charlotte for the weekend.
Yep.
So
exactly. It's
we can
just
be
good
your
listening.
Travel companions.
It's good listening here.
Yes, it is.
The Truth Squad, Scoop Squad. All right, first topic I want to acknowledge. I feel like we can't have a show without acknowledging. If you heard that was a spoon dropping.
We are eating ice cream.
We are, as usual.
It's what we do.
But I do want to not let, I don't want to let the podcast go without mentioning the mass shooting that occurred this week, yesterday, in Texas. And it is, you know, it's startling when young children die. And I know that there's mass shootings all the time, unfortunately. But when it involves small children and a teacher, it just really, in my personal life, it hits home really close. I don't think that you can really wrap your head around empathy for the situation unless you've worked in a school and know how small that setting is and how small those classrooms are and how small those little people are collectively in your classroom.
I think it's important that we let everybody know our thoughts and prayers are with all those families. But when is enough? When is enough?
Yeah.
Are we tired of we cannot become numb to the fact that the innocent are being slaughtered mm-hmm. at the hands of our own citizens. And I think that needs to be addressed. I think a lot of things in this aspect need to be addressed. And a lot of people from both sides that feel certain ways and have certain stances need to come together and talk about people are still dying.
Mm-hmm. Babies are dying.
Babies. This is different. They didn't have a shot.
No, sons and daughters are dying.
They trust our vote. They trust our stewardship. So it's our obligation to protect them.
Well, and you said earlier when we were talking before we were recording that, you know, like, it's just unfathomable. And you think it can't happen here. And we have to stop. We have to imagine that it will happen here. Like, we have to no longer say it can't happen here. We have to say it is going to happen here. Yeah. And we need to be ready. And that's more than just depending on your teachers to corral students and hide in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Or you ask a teacher, like if someone asked me to carry a gun and then somebody was coming in, I don't feel comfortable enough to be at point at such a close range.
The system that's supposed to be protecting us.
Something's turned upside down.
I mean, this is we're talking about gun control. We're talking about babies being murdered. We're talking about education, how this all impacts. I mean, like, this is the very fiber of our of our country. What is going on? What is going on?
I don't know. It's like the incident last night up at Vista View. Like, what is going on? And thank God that someone was comfortable carrying.
Can you remind us what happened?
Well, there was apparently a graduation party up at Vista View complex, which is, there is a Kanawha County preschool up there. And one of my really good friends that I taught with for years teaches up there. And, you know, the history of crime and violence up there is long. But last night there was a graduation party, and apparently a gentleman was caught speeding and left the scene and then came back with a gun and was getting ready to open fire on all of these people.
Oh my
and
gosh.
A bystander, a woman who legally had a pistol, shot and killed him before he could do any damage. And the children up at Vista View have, talk about trauma. You know, it was just a year ago or so that one of the moms up there pushing her baby in a stroller was gunned down in front of children playing on a playground.
You know, I think there's like this thought too that are we becoming apathetic because nothing's being done? So when, as you know, things continue not, you know, we just talk around this problem. It's a systemic issue with government. Hard conversations get talked around, get put into a committee, makes the masses feel like something's happening. If you put it into a study, let's put it into a study committee.
And then it seems to satisfy.
And then everybody's like, oh yeah, finally, we're going to have a study committee. Oh, well, the study committee met. That's really exciting. And then years pass and nothing meaningful has changed. And then what happens? We get apathetic. Because we feel, at least for me, I can't speak for everybody, in this situation, I feel like it's not going to change.
I mean,
and I hate having to live with this. It's disturbing. I want to read you, I did some digging, as I do, but the gunviolencearchive.org has an incident report of mass shootings. The 24th was Texas. May 23rd, there was one in Cleveland, Ohio, five injured. May 23rd, North Charleston, South Carolina, there was a mass shooting, five injured. May 21st, Goshen, Indiana, there were two people killed, three injured. May 21st, Tacoma, Washington, four people injured. May 20th, Kissimmee, Florida, one person murdered, three injured. May 20th, Highland, California, eight injured, one killed. Let's see, New Orleans.
You're killing me, Jenny. You're killing me over here. Well,
May 20th.
I mean, this is bad.
All we got to do is look at the West.
Three injured, one murdered.
Two.
Chicago, Illinois, May 19th. We're not even halfway through the month of May.
So what does that suggest?
That this is a problem that's not being addressed.
So we're all agreeing on this.
Oh, 100%.
So is...
But I do think that the conversation, when something like this happens, is immediately we talk about guns and what we got to do with the guns. When honestly, when I look at the people that are doing the killing, you know, and I look at their background or I look at their family life, mm-hmm. you know, this guy and
or their mental health,
like this guy in Texas, both of his parents, he's not being raised by his parents. He's being raised by his grandparents because both of his parents are drug addicted. You know, his grandfather was a felon. That's why he couldn't be around firearms. Like, he was a troubled kid from a broken, dysfunctional family. And the underlying issue, you know, it's not just the guns aren't the enemy. The enemy is the person, the individual who's undergoing, you know, mental health crisis and struggling in a broken family. You know, I mean, that's the harder thing to solve.
So if guns aren't the issue, and I hear what you're saying, right, then we're just playing the numbers. If guns
it's not the issue, Jonathan, because a gun up there at Vistaview actually stopped a mass shooting.
Oh,
you know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
She's a hero. She's a hero.
Yeah, she used her gun the way it was supposed to be used.
She's a hero, but when we start talking about guns, then we start talking about the style of guns and things of that nature. And that's what's starting to really, that's what's echoing in our gun-toting citizens, such as myself.
I just think that's a rabbit trail. I think you're getting in the weeds with the guns and the types of guns.
I think if I can carry 100 rounds, I'm going to do a whole lot of damage. And I don't see the cause for that. I don't see the cause for a 30 round mag. I don't see the cause for drum mags and things of that nature, which gives our legal carrying citizens that want to defend themselves a fighting shot. What gives our police department a fighting shot against those that have criminal behaviors but have an arsenal. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we can carry all we want to, but if we don't have enough firepower to deal with it because they have access to army-style arms, I think that's a question. I think that's a conversation that needs to be had, too.
Well, there's conflicting stories on, you know, when the assault weapons ban was enforced, on Bing, it says that federally funded report, the National Institute of Justice at the Department of Justice found that the number of gun crimes involving automatic weapons dropped by 17% in the 6 cities involved in the setting during the ban.
Well, Jenny, you mentioned earlier, like when we were talking about this, we have to say that this is going to happen. And you mentioned the vacancies on the police department. Mm. And if we're going to take this serious and we are going to admit that this could happen here
it will.
We just need to operate like it will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not operate it? Worst thing that's going to happen if it doesn't happen is that it doesn't happen. That's but if it does happen and we act like it's not going to happen.
We need a fully staffed police force. We need a mm-hmm. trained police force. There are things that we can do outside of, you know, Jonathan, you were talking about the gun conversation. Mm-hmm. There are things that we can do outside of that to make our schools safer.
What do you think about that, Jonathan? What do you think about what she just said about the vacancies on the police force? And do you feel like
will they be ready?
The city is prepared if something like that would happen?
I'm going to speak. I can't speak ignorantly because I don't know if they had any special training. I don't know if they had increase in their armory. I don't know. What I can tell you is I don't think anybody's ready for it. So we must be prepared for it.
Right.
There just needs to be more conversation. If you've got to pray for your kid, like they are getting married and you're sending them off or they're going to college every day, they're going to school. If you got to plead the blood of Jesus over your kid every day, which you should do. But I might not see you again.
Yeah. Hugging your kids like that you might not see them.
Right,
again.
And we're sending them to a place, like we talked about, seems like our conversations were better in the green room, right? We're sending our kids to a place that we said the leaders that are in place are the right leaders in place, right? And I'm using this in a broad scope. But we trust that nothing is going to happen to you adversely to that magnitude when we send our kids to school. And what
it's a false sense of
that's
security.
A false sense of security when you can walk directly into a school and hand anybody anything at any time. So, yeah, I don't know what that looks like. I hope it doesn't look like the prison setting and I'm exaggerating, but we need to make these kids feel safe. We need to be safe, and we need to have assurance that we shouldn't be practicing shooting drills like we practice fire drills.
But we do.
Yeah, active shooter drills like we practice fire drills. It is almost certain that in a facility of this magnitude that you'll have some type of fire, right? Some type of issue of that magnitude. Therefore, we have to have those protocols.
Right.
So what are we saying?
We cannot continue to turn a blind eye. Something's got to happen that you can file a mental hygiene and be sure that that is actually going to be, you can follow through on it
100%.
For whatever reason. When there's a guy yelling at the children on the playground at Sacred Heart, telling them that they're going to poison their Happy Meals, as was reported in a meeting.
And that's where the breakdown is, Jenny.
And that was the first thing that crossed my mind, was that we have parents reporting that their children are being threatened in city schools. And for some reason, we can't do anything about
it. What's the mental hygiene office doing?
The first thought in my mind yesterday was like, oh, you know what? That could happen. That could happen on the playground when somebody decides to follow through on their threats.
Well, the I don't know if you remember the case not too long ago of the gentleman that was living in the woods down near Kanawha State Forest, and he chopped up his parents. Like, if he doesn't fit the bill for a mental hygiene, then I don't know who does.
The problem with the mental hygiene issue is we don't have enough staff to do that, or the process is so monotonous. It's you have to call the magistrate. The magistrate has to be there. All right. So no matter what time of the night of it is, the magistrate has to be there. The cop stays with the client till that process is fulfilled. That could take up to 6 hours at the minimum. So when I went to the Capitol for, I think it was the law enforcement appreciation back in the spring, I got a chance to talk to, state troopers and all the chiefs throughout the state of West Virginia, and deputy sheriffs, excuse me. And they said it. This process, the doctor doesn't want to be involved in it this long. I don't have the manpower or the personnel to do it. And it's just not efficient. And so you'll find situations where people need mental health hygiene, and it's not happening because we don't have enough people to do it, and the system is messed up. It should not take me 8 hours to get this done, right?
Right.
I should not have to wait for a magistrate to get this done. So just to shed light on why those things aren't happening, our mental health system is broke.
Yes.
It's broke. But that's a whole nother.
That's a whole other topic.
Okay, it's broken.
Yeah.
Then it needs to be fixed.
How do we fix it? We need some money.
Well, that brings us to our next topic. State just won a big settlement. $161 million.
I think a little bit more than that.
$161.5 million settlement. Yesterday, on the eve of closing arguments in the opioid trial. This was the second settlement. There's lots more money coming down the pike, and I think this is a good time to take a break.
If you would like to make sure your voice is heard, contact Scoop Squad Truth Squad at gmail.com or find them on Facebook. If your business would like to reach out to our rapidly growing audience, contact Ron Hughes at 304-395-1111 or email ron.hughes@wvradio.com.
And we're back to the Scoop Squad from Charleston, West Virginia, from the studios of WVRC Media, where we record the podcast every week. Let's get back to Jenny and Ashley and their special guest, Jonathan Frazier.
Makes me think of a boxer.
Ah, the one that lost?
Oh, I didn't say that.
Oh, that's strike two. That is strike two. But you know what? It's good to be able to reflect on the fact that you ran a race in 54 days. You made an impact. And if one, I know it's cliche, but if one person votes for you, that means you have a platform. Mm-hmm. We had hundreds of people vote for us. And I think that's, we have an obligation to just be a little consistent, mm-hmm. right? Stay active, be consistent. And Charleston says, hey, we like you, mm-hmm. but serve a little bit more. Let us see you a little bit more.
You hustled.
We try.
You're a hustler.
We try.
Your whole family's a hustler.
We try.
Hustles.
A that daughter of yours has got a long, mm-hmm. great career in whatever she chooses.
Because of my great wife of mine.
She's,
my wife.
There you go. That's a good answer.
It is. It's all her.
Her.
Because I'm crazy. Right? I'm passionate. I'm crazy. I put myself in things that...
She's the rock. Like, she has to hold it all together. I mean, that's what moms do.
Right.
That's what
I don't
do.
Know. I'm the crazy one. There's only one crazy placeholder in the family, and I take that.
Passionate.
Passionate. It depends on who you talk to.
That's okay.
I'm married to a psychologist. He's always trying. Yeah, he's always. I say he's got a big old file on me somewhere. He has a positive behavior support plan in
place.
You're
going to have to be positive and passionate to deal with what we are about to endeavor post COVID.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
we're not even out of COVID, folks.
No, hell, it's back.
It's back. 90 some.
Stop.
Oh, yes. It's back.
I know. Stop. Yep. I can't hear anything.
90 some cases today.
You gonna wear your mask?
Nope.
No, I gotta agree with Ashley. You know what? I wore that mask, and I still got it.
Yeah, we've been vaccinated. Everybody's been vaccinated, triple vaccinated. We're triple masked, and we're still getting it. I mean,
my mom.
Wear your mask, people. Wear your mask.
Jonathan
doesn't have a mask right now.
You know what? I will. He does not have a mask on. Yeah, my mom. Right. I need to tell you about my mom. She's going to be 80 on June 18th, and I just love her so much. She's such a sweet, sweet woman. But she is, if you wanted to see ultra conservative in the dictionary, Carolyn Withrow would be there. She's Southern Baptist.
Ooh, she might
is
have to sit
a
across
Trump
from me
loving. She Republican, and she is not vaccinated. She is not going to get vaccinated. She has been careful. She wore a mask. She quarantined for a really long time, but she has not gotten COVID. And and she's like, I'm going to be 80.
Wow.
Why am I going to put myself through? I don't trust it. I'm not mm-hmm. going to put myself through it.
But that's cool.
Yeah, good. I mean, that's
do
good
you.
Part.
Do you.
Yeah.
You know, do you.
Yeah, like, I mean, people, some of my you. Less, you know, conservative friends are like, how do you deal with that? It's like, it's my mom, of course. I love her. I don't,
I
mean, that's
there's
her
a
choice.
Level of responsibility that we must have, too, if we're going to a Pittsburgh Steelers game and we're around, just play the numbers, guys. All right? That's what I'm saying. Be smart. Play the numbers. I mean, don't be around 1,000 people and expect that I'm not going to have or be able to expose somebody.
Just if you're going to do that, then just realize you might get it. I mean, if you don't want to wear your mask, that's fine. But you might get it.
And give it to somebody else and da-da-da.
Another good friend of mine's a respiratory therapist, and she will not wear her mask. And she will not go anywhere that she has to wear a mask. She said in school, we were trained to take those masks immediately off if we were around people. The bacteria that grows on that mask.
Yeah. As a kindergarten teacher, I can tell you the effects of that mask on our littles was devastating. I mean, we saw speech cases go through the roof, quadruple the amount of kids qualified for speech. They hid. Like, they weren't learning to read. We didn't realize until mid-year that they didn't even know the Pledge of Allegiance.
But didn't we go through this? Was it polio? Was it polio? We went through this.
Polio was foodborne.
It was polio, right? Everybody had to wear the mask.
No, it was
fact check me, somebody.
Spanish flu.
Spanish flu?
The polio is...
Yeah, thank you for fact checking.
Polio is a foodborne illness.
Thank you.
We all got vaccinated.
Anyway, we're wearing masks.
Anyway.
Hey, do you, man.
Exactly.
I'm not going to make anybody feel uncomfortable because I'm not, if they are like wanting me to wear a mask, I'm going to be wearing a mask. Sure. I'm like, okay, whatever. It's not that big of a deal to me.
All right, let's talk about, because I'm itching to get into this.
Okay.
Opioid settlement money.
Okay.
Let's talk about it.
All right, well, let's talk about it. $161 million was settled yesterday. And I'm looking up right here on the Gazette. I'm trying to find the Gazette article for some reason.
Well, anyway,
$27 million is going to Narcan. Ironically, city council at-large candidate who popped through the top six Democrats, Joe Solomon, and again...
We're dropping spoons.
We're dropping spoons everywhere because we're on.
Ice cream.
Anyway, I just, you know, kind of, you got to follow the money, folks. I don't know if this is a big deal to anybody else, but I thought it was ironic that $26 million is going to go to Narcan, and we've got a city council candidate who's platform,
a couple of them,
several of them, whose platform is to get more Narcan in the hands of people. I have my own opinions on it, and I'll keep it to myself. But what do you guys think about this settlement? What do you guys think about so much money running? I mean, that's a lot of money to be running into the state.
In the name of recovery.
In the name of...
27 million
going.
Yep. That's a chunk. So let's talk about who benefits from that, those millions of dollars.
The pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, exactly. by the tune of $27 million.
Yeah, but multiply that by hundreds of cities across the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's
yeah.
where special interest is formed.
This is just the first
right.
one.
That's where special interest is formed. So before we try to micro that and engage that straight to the city, we got to know that's a bigger picture right there.
Yeah.
That's big farm.
Right.
That's big farm.
Yeah, and they're the problem and they're the solution.
So there's a trickle down effect.
Isn't that funny?
That's good. Tweet that. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Tweet that.
You create
must be
the
nice
problem,
to be the problem and the solution.
You create the
make
solution.
A lot of money that way.
Yep. Yeah, you do make a lot of money that way. I think it's...
I.e. guns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. It includes $134.5 million in cash. According to Patrick Morrissey. In the article at the Charleston Gazette, Morrissey said that amount includes $134.5 million in cash. I mean, I just envision like Patrick Morrissey walking around in little suitcases of I've never even seen $134.5 million in cash. I just would like to see it. It's a lot of money. $27 million in Narcan and a drug that is used to treat people suffering an opioid overdose. The portion of the cash settlement that doesn't go toward attorney costs and other fees will be dispersed among local governments. So I would assume that Charleston's going to be included in one of those local governments.
Thoughts?
How are we set for that money? I mean, what are we doing to be prepared? What are we going to do with that money?
There's going to be a lot of people fighting for it.
Yeah.
I mean, do people out there know what Narcan is? I mean, I know Joe Solomon likes to talk about Narcan and among the homeless people, you know, the homeless vagrants out on the streets of Charleston and how heroic it is when they use Narcan to bring people back to life. I mean, I don't know. It's crazy to me that I can't make it make sense. Like, why are we putting this much money into a product to try to bring people back to life that are intent on killing themselves? Because the ultimate end to drug addiction is death, unless you stop doing the drug. So I can't, and I've tried to make it make sense. I have tried to make it make sense. I've talked to people, you know, that have to do with harm reduction, and some of them are very well intentioned people, and I can see their heart.
A lot of them.
A lot of them, but Absolutely. Some of them are not.
And some of them are like that on the Republican and Democratic side.
100%.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's a big
money
grab.
But we have to be able to weed these. We have to be able to latch on to the ones who are well-intentioned and weed out the ones that are in it for perhaps personal.
Well, I think the bigger question, you know, is the state, is the city ready? And I go back to the needle distribution that was occurring down on the west side by a small group of people. You know, I feel like, and I have for several years, Ashley, you and I have talked about this a lot, mm-hmm. that there is a lot of money rolling into West Virginia. This was not the first settlement. The first settlement of this same case happened on April 18th when Johnson & Johnson's parent company, Janssen Pharmaceuticals, reached $99 million settlement.
And what have we seen in our city since then? What have we seen happen?
Well, we don't know I'm hoping we receive some money from that, but we don't know.
We don't know yet. But the thing is our, again, going back to the question is, how are we preparing to, what regulations or are we going to do things like create a structure where we're saying, okay, if some of this money is going to recovery, are we creating expectations for companies that are going to come into our city and do this type of work? Are we creating ordinances or supports around, okay, you got $27 million to distribute Narcan. Narcan's expensive. Are we giving it to EMS? Mm-hmm. Are we giving it to recovery centers?
Where's it going?
And we're going back to the mental hygiene. If someone's tried to kill themselves, they are a harm to themselves and other people, potentially other people. You know, where's the step down? Where's the, okay, let's bring them back to life. I've talked to people who've been brought back to life on Narcan. They've told me they're mad.
At what?
Their drugs are gone. I have sat and talked to several people who have said, you know, I'm mad. I was mad. I wanted my drug back. I've talked to people
absolutely.
Who think that it's fun. I mean, to
it's you know, part it would be of the dangerous buzz for me to do that.
To kill yourself and get brought back. Yeah, it's the insanity of it.
Everybody has a right to live.
I agree. I'm not saying we don't do that. I'm saying, where is the second tier of that? Like, how it, or do you believe that there even needs to be, if someone's, you know, if EMS sees someone who's killed themselves three times in one night,
they got to bring them back.
They do need to bring them
they
back.
They have to bring them back.
But what's the next step? Just releasing them back out into the community?
I see what you're saying, but hopefully when somebody ODs and Narcan, we're not going to just let them get up and walk away. We do a little bit of aftercare. That's the hope. I mean, because I don't know when I'm in that recovery business. That's what I do, provide services for those that are needed, and some of those that are so far gone that we can do one or two things. We can help them now, or we can help them later in some other capacity that's going to cost us more money, because that seems like that's what everybody's thinking about, how it affects them financially. And I really think that we have to come to some kind of conclusion, but people deserve the right for EMT that swore an oath, and doctors that swore an oath.
Well, you're talking about EMT, though. I'm talking about the people that are on the streets of Charleston right now inside of tents. But I'm saying, when you listen to Joe Solomon and the activists talk about Narcan and how the homeless on the streets are Narcaning each other to keep each other alive after an overdose, they're not getting it, basically, is what you're saying. They're abusing it. That's right.
They're not using it in the way that it needs to be used. But you can't regulate that, right? You can't say, how do you say that? Well, this person's abusing it and this person isn't abusing it, so we're going to, like,
I don't think they walked in saying, hey, tonight I want to die. You know what I mean? I don't think they walked in and said, hey, guys, I'm pretty sure in what I've seen in my life, if it's too good, if it causes me to nod out, hit me with the Narcan.
Bring me back.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Right. So, this whole situation is bad. And complicated. And expensive.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
And it weighs on people's heartstrings because, and I say this to the day that I die, A mentor said, Jonathan, you're only 6 degrees of separation from someone, right? I agree to that to a certain extent. In West Virginia, in our home, and what we've come to understand, I will wager you are 1 degree away from someone that has impacted you due to drug abuse.
Oh, I think I haven't talked to any families that that haven't been touched by addiction. I literally don't know anybody that in some way, shape, or form hasn't had a friend, a loved one, someone 100%. Who has been bit.
A son.
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Kids, you know, that's the most heartrending, you know, so.
But are we having these convos? Like, are we having these conversations? Maybe the
No, we're pointing the finger and calling, you know, one side's calling the other no compassion, uncompassionate, whatever
the
word
is.
Yeah, I
mean, I don't know.
The other, you know.
I've been calling Nazi.
Yeah. Homophobe. Or fascist or whatever. We're attacking.
Racist.
We're attacking ideas because they don't necessarily line up with our ideology. That's what's happening.
And we'll disagree on, you know, some of the parts of recovery. I get it. And sometimes it just doesn't make any sense. But I cannot fathom if I have an opportunity to save somebody's life, looking their mom or dad in the face and say, I didn't do it. You know, I didn't give her the Narcan. Or, you know, nobody's going to admit that. But you know what I mean. I didn't want to do it. You know, I just don't
want. Oh, gosh, personally, yeah. If that's your situation personally, you have a responsibility to do that, yes.
Okay. We have
I think
to.
We need to take a break, though, Jenny.
I think so,
ice cream's melting. You guys go grab some ice cream, and we'll meet you back here in a sec.
But I'm here. I'm not there. Yes, I'm here. If I'm somewhere, baby, I'm nowhere.
And we're back from the break. From the capital city of West Virginia, this is the Scoop Squad, with our hosts, Jenny and Ashley, bringing a diversity of ideas to conversations affecting the people of Charleston, West Virginia, and throughout West Virginia. Let's get back to Jenny and Ashley and their special guest, Jonathan Frazier.
Jonathan, I think it's interesting, I'll steal the mic for a second, that you said at the break, gosh, we really don't disagree on a whole lot.
No.
And, I mean, Jenny and I've said that for the last couple of years. Like, and I just think that when people are solutions-oriented, and if you talk enough, you're going to find out that you really all do want the same thing. You know, are there different ways of getting somewhere that we all want to go? Yes. But can we all merge, you know, and eventually get on the same highway to end up at the same place?
Yeah, I mean, we'll communicate. I think communication has to be effective, whether you are Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever. I think that's important. But at the end of the day, this is so important because you're still gonna decide at the ballot anyway, right? Mm-hmm. You're still gonna make your choice no matter what we talk about. You're gonna make your informed choice, but this conversation, what you guys are doing and inviting diversity will allow other people to get excited about what's going on here and learn the more.
Well, and give people the hope that, goodness, we can come to solutions. We can talk about hard conversations. We can have hard conversations and not be offended, right?
Well, I think that's what good government does. Good government allows for healthy debate of ideas to come to the common good. Of course, we're not always going to agree on everything, but that healthy debate, especially when it comes to policy and for the good of the people that you're supposed to be serving, must happen. You have to consider everyone's voice.
You have to listen.
We have to broaden our horizon to a certain extent when it comes to communicating across the aisle and to people that don't even look like us. We got to start talking about that. It's not a bad thing. You know, nobody should ever have to feel some type of way for being some type of, you know, looking this way. Mm-hmm. But we have to start talking about these
things. And you have
things.
To be able to reach out and say, hey,
let's
you know,
talk.
this offended me, or this, you could have said this better, or.
Well, Rob and I have all kinds of conversations.
Oh,
about,
yes. If you're married, man, yeah. You have those conversations all the time.
Yeah. You know, Rob and I have these conversations very often where I'll say, you know what, if I wasn't a woman, .. And he'll be like, I don't believe that. And I'm like, you know what? Because you don't live in a woman's body. You don't know, because these subtle Facts. Things that happen to me, you go unseen by you. Both I don't things. get mad because he doesn't understand my perspective.
All facts.
Because he's never lived that experience. Just like with you, Jonathan, you brought up something really, maybe something I wouldn't have even thought twice about as a white woman, on an interview that you were listening to, and you brought it up to me, and I was like, you know what, you're right about that. Like, but it's important for me to not be defensive when I'm receiving mm-hmm. information, and it's important for you not to be defensive when you hear something from out of somebody that may not have been as mindful as you would have been, you know. So that to take those defenses down, and you say, look, I need to approach this, I need to talk about it, I need to like get a feeler out on this thing, and me not being defensive, being like, well, that's ridiculous, I can't believe you thought that, you know. It's like, we've yeah. got to be willing to listen to hard things and to talk about hard things in order to move forward and have a more open America.
So what was the conversation that you had? What was the hard conversation?
It was a good conversation with a Republican mayoral candidate, Lance Wolf. And please hear my heart. This guy was one of the first guys that shook my hand at the forum.
Mm-hmm.
Came right up to me. It's out a picture of it. I think I shared it, right? And so I was listening to him on Dave one morning, and you know, he's a very good speaker. Very good speaker. I was impressed. And regardless of who I support or what's going on, if you are running for a leadership position over our community, you got to get vetted. I'm listening to you, just like with anything else. And he was speaking about the homeless initiative, and he used a word. He said, well, and I'm paraphrasing, so if I'm wrong about this, you know, come and get me, guys. But this is what, you know, he said on the podcast. He said we need to segregate the homeless population. Now, context, the right word, right? Connotation for an African-American, not so much. Kind of was the cringe, right? It kind of was, hey, all right, you know, I'm listening to you, so I'm obviously giving your rhetoric a shot, right? Because I want to be informed. But now how are we using our power and our influence in our words? And are we, and I don't, and in no way, shape, or form do I think he was being malice about that. So let me be clear. I'm going to stand on that. But I felt like it was the wrong choice of words. And so I contacted teachers, right? Contacted a few buddies. And they said, what do you think about this word in context? And they're like, wouldn't use it. Now, these are white teachers, black teachers. You know, they're just like, we wouldn't use it for the fact that we understand what segregation was. Because that was the word for it. It's not like we go around saying, hey, let's go ahead and use the word apartheid in this sentence. Every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not the word that we use. And so I challenged him publicly. And I tried to be as respectful as I could, because it's not fair to challenge somebody publicly and not give them an opportunity. So what I will say on this platform, because when you do the right thing, and for me, when you do the Christian thing, it's what you want. That's what it was. And I appreciated it. And that's what leaders do. He said, hey, Jonathan, text me. So he got my number from somewhere. Did your homework well. Way to go, Lance Wolf team. I hear you. And just said, hey, basically said, I might have took that out of context. I did take that out of context. I think you took it out of context, but it wasn't the right word. Mm-hmm. All right, so we can let that slide. You said, I'm sorry. That's huge. That's huge. And so kudos to you. And, you know, I publicly challenged you on Coffee with Jay. And I'm going to publicly say I accept your apology. And that is what community, and that yes. is what we need to do more of. So kudos to you. Don't know if I'm voting for you. So don't go there. But right. as a person, as a human being, thanks.
Very Very good. Well, you guys have just wasted another good approximately an hour. I think we've cut shorter than an hour with the Scoop Squad here and with our wonderful guest, Jonathan Frazier. I hope you come back.
Thank you.
It was great, Jonathan. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week.
You added a lot of flavor to our Scoop Squad this evening.
A little local color.
We need more of that.
Yes.
We need more people that look like me active in politics.
We need more conversations like this. Next time, I want to dig into even harder conversations.
Yeah. We'll see
I mean,
next
I really
week.
Would
Hear
love to
week.
Talk about.
Love it.
You know.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I think we need. This is such a great opportunity. I can go on and on for another 2 hours, but I won't waste any more of your time. Thank you for joining us. This is Jenny.
This is Ashley.
And this is Scoop Squad. See you next week.
Rebroadcast, retransmission, or transcription is not permissible without the expressed approval of Scoop Squad Truth Squad. Copyright 2022 Scoop Squad Truth Squad.